The journals of Lewis and Clark record that on this day in 1805, the Shoshone woman Sacajawea, who, with her French-Canadian husband, was helping guide the expedition, she gave birth. Officially, that's the only birth noted by the Corps of Discovery, though some Native Americans have claimed that some of the explorers, including the leaders, fathered other children with tribal women. Historians don't know. But with the Lewis and Clark bicentennial celebrations, people have all sorts of questions. From South Dakota Public Radio, Brian Bull reports.
It is a beautiful evening.
At the Lewis and Clark Interpretive Center in Sioux City, Iowa, visitors watch robotic figures of Meriwether Lewis and William Clark mourn the loss of companion Sergeant Floyd.
You spend months thinking of everything you could possibly need on an expedition, but somehow you're still unprepared for moments like this.
But Lewis and Clark were prepared for meeting and consorting with members of the opposite sex. One encounter was recorded by Clark in November 1805, read here by an actor.
An old woman and wife to a chief of the Chinooks came and made a camp near ours. She brought with her six young squaws, I believe, for the purpose of gratifying the passions of the men in our party. Those people appear to view sensuality as a necessary evil, and do not appear to abhor it as a crime in the unmarried state.
They were young men. They were full of passion. They had to be full of passion.
Marcia Poole, assistant director of the center, says while some tourists are shocked upon hearing about the explorers' sex lives, she says it makes for good history.
People are much more interesting with all of their, shall we say, I'm not sure, their imperfections, perhaps, is one way of putting it. But we're all human beings, and I think that tells us more about who these people were.
And visitors like Jim Kaler and Brian Hill are sympathetic.
I can see that. I can understand that.
You send men out into the wilderness for a couple of years and they're bound to want to have some fun.
But Brad Tennant, a history professor at Presentation College in Aberdeen, says the spiritual beliefs of the Arikaras and Mandans gave the explorers a chance for some welcome intercultural relations.
Person had intercourse with a woman, and then that woman would have intercourse with her husband. The power from one person to the next would be transferred to pass on that ability to be good hunters, to be good providers. And here you have this new group of people who are seen as being very special, as having big medicine.
Indians were especially taken with Clark's slave York, whose dark skin and physique suggested very big medicine. One Arikara warrior had York spend a night with his wife and stood outside the lodge to keep the two from being interrupted. But there were misunderstandings. In November 1804, Sergeant John Ordway's affair with an Indian woman nearly ended in tragedy.
The women engaged in sexual relations unbeknownst to their husbands. They could be kicked out of the community. They might even be physically punished. In the case of John Ordway, when the husband returned and found Ordway with a woman, the woman was actually stabbed several times.
Clark ordered Ordway to give the husband some trinkets, then told the Indian couple to go home and make up. Later, while wintering with a Mandan in 1805, Clark described the buffalo dance, used to transfer an elder's skills, say, to hunt, to a younger man through sex with his wife.
The old men arranged themselves in a circle and after smoke a pipe, which handed them by a young man, dress up for the purpose. The young men who have their wives back of the circle go to one of the old men with a whining tone and request the old man to take his wife, who presents naked except a robe. The girl then takes the old man and leads him to a convenient place for the business. We sent a man to this medicine dance last night. They gave him four girls.
The explorers spent a very long winter with the Mandan, familiarizing themselves with the customs of their hosts. But an outbreak of venereal disease stifled the activities for a while, until Lewis and Clark departed in April 1805. More encounters happened with the Shoshones, who became resentful if their women were rejected. In the Pacific Northwest, the Clatsop and Chinook Indians used sex for trade, to the point where Lewis warned his men against running out of provisions. But Lewis and Clark's unofficial explorations may have left a few legacies along the trail, too. In a cemetery on the Lower Brule Sioux Reservation of South Dakota, Sheldon Fletcher reads his great-great-great-grandfather's marker.
Joseph Lewis DeSmit, born 1805, died 1889. Son of Meriwether Lewis of the famed Lewis and Clark expedition.
Fletcher says while meeting with Teton Sioux Indians near the Bad River in 1804, Lewis may have accidentally put himself into a marriage with an Indian woman named Winona. Some call Fletcher's story an old wives' tale.
The marriage record and the baptismal record. We have many registers here. These go back to the 1860s and 1870s.
But at the Center for Western Studies in Sioux Falls, researcher Harry Thompson unfolds a musty registry that reinforces the claim.
June 18, 1872, Joseph DeSummit Lewis, baptized at Yankton Agency at the age of 68. His parents are listed as Captain Meriwether Lewis of Lewis and Clark's expedition, and his mother is given as Winona, signed by the officiating priest Joseph Cook.
But not everyone accepts their alleged lineage to the expedition. In his home on the Cheyenne River Sioux Reservation, Harry Charger sings a prayer song for a sweat lodge ceremony. His great-great-grandfather, Martin Charger, is listed in some records as the son of Meriwether Lewis. Charger says the claims were made to liven up history books.
Of course, people will add and delete and argue, and only the great essence knows what is true.
For Day to Day, I'm Brian Bull, in Vermilion, South Dakota.